This is the Greg Bedard Patriots Podcast with Nick Cavins.
Okay, Greg, for the past couple of weeks, you've been dying to get to the 2022 Patriots. Now, I know some people are listening to this and saying, really? We got to focus on 2022 when the draft is now 2 weeks away. Listen, I follow along. What Greg says is what we want to do here, and we go with what Greg is thinking. So Greg Bedard says, let's just press the pause button on the draft stuff and all of that, and let's look at 2022. Because, Greg, your argument to those people who say, why are we talking about 2022? I think your argument is, well, we have to talk about 2022 because you think it's going to affect the draft. So, you know, depending on what this roster looks like in 2022, that should lead you to what they might do 2 weeks from today to set themselves up to be better off in 2022. So, Greg, tell the people. You say the situation in 22 is a concern to you. 35 players are already signed for $167 million of the cap. Tell us why the Patriots are looking at 2022 and saying to themselves, oh, man, we got to figure this thing out.
Okay. So I understand people are probably like, you know, what are we doing? You have to understand that teams run on different tracks at the same time. Yes, they are looking at this coming year with the draft and things like that. Sometimes you do draft for need. And we could see that with the Patriots with quarterback and maybe a couple other places to give themselves cover, like say for Stephon Gilmore, if they have plans on trading him or what have you. But I've been in a bunch of different offices for general managers. And one of the things that you see in every one of their offices is a depth chart basically by year up on their board. And it's either by year or it's one big depth chart color-coded by when a player's contract is up. So you need to keep an eye on the future while you also keep an eye on the present. And a couple of things that I have learned covering the Patriots over the years is there's a couple different things when it comes to Belichick. Number one, if he has the means, he is basically going to fill every need on the roster before he gets to the draft. Now, I don't know what the reason for that is. I don't think he's ever said, but to me, it's twofold. It's number one, it sort of clouds what they're going to do in the draft. It makes it a mystery to everybody else which direction the Patriots are going to go. I think it also benefits the team in that we all know that Bill loves veterans. So it gives them options. It increases the competition on the roster. So that they did what they did this year in terms of the roster was not a huge surprise because of the cap space that they had. But they basically, we went through it. We went through the needs list before free agency started. We said they were going to be aggressive. And they basically went out and filled all the needs on the roster right now.
Right.
And so that's by design. The second thing that I've learned covering Belichick over the years with the draft is that his draft picks almost always center on the future a year out. I mean, and we've talked about it before, and this is not any breaking news, but it takes a very special rookie to play a lot, especially to start early on in his career with the Patriots. And COVID probably isn't helping any of that. And so if you're looking for the draft and being one of these draft Knicks that are like, oh, you know, because you'll hear the Mel Kuypers and what have you be like, well, they have a need here. Well, that's great and all. But, you know, Bill Belichick doesn't care about what his needs are right now. What he does most of the time is draft with a heavy eye on the following year or the following couple of years. And when you look at the roster for next year, it's a concern, and concern in a couple different ways. Number one, first of all these free agents that they sign have to work out. If they don't, then it becomes even more of a problem. Now you're talking more dead money. You have to go in a different direction. But we're just going with the supposition that all of these free agents work out. They all won't, but we're going to go with that theory because they kind of need it to happen with where they are with their roster. And I don't have, let me get this, let me make this point. I do not have a concern with the salary cap, even though it's not great. 35 players and you're already at $167 million when the cap is probably going to be around $200 million next year. You know, that leaves you just, you have 15, 16 more top 51 slots, and you have about $15 million. About $35 million. This is why I married an accountant.
There you go.
And I didn't take many math classes at Rutgers.
Neither did I.
So that is sort of the baseline. And what you have to understand is these are the free agents, major contributors. And I'm not even getting into the special teamers like Matthew Slater. And there's a whole bunch of them that are in that category. Let's see. Matthew Slater, Brandon King, this guy Leroy Reynolds that they just signed. Nick Folk is a free agent. These are the major contributors that we expect for this year that are not under contract for next year. Stephon Gilmore, Devin McCourty, Trent Brown, Dante Hightower. Well, Julian Edelman, he is now retired. Cam Newton, JC Jackson, Adrian Phillips, Isaiah Wynn, they have to pick up his fifth-year option or not. If they don't, he's a free agent. Juwan Bentley, Sony Michel is another fifth-year option decision. If they don't pick it up, he's an unrestricted free agent next year. And James White. Like, that's, you know, Nick, I don't know how you feel about it, but that's a pretty sizable core of your team right there that is going to be in a free agent in 20 and 22. And I'll pause here. I'll get your thoughts on it, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about who's where right now in 2022 and why it's important to get pieces in place out of this draft that will at least be competitive in the worst case scenario next year.
Well, two things jump out at me. First of all, the secondary. What's going to happen with Gilmore? What is going to happen with JC Jackson? Those are two huge questions right now. You know, we could see Gilmore get traded on draft night or on that Friday night, and then it changes our expectations, right? If you trade Gilmore and you draft a young corner, and then you bring back JC Jackson at a reasonable price, then, you know, cornerback isn't in a bad spot. But if you keep Gilmore this year and you gave JC Jackson the second round tender, so JC Jackson stays around this season, and then you go into next year with Gilmore walking and JC Jackson probably looking for a sizable contract, then you've got to address cornerback in this draft. It is a necessity. It's not, oh, we might have to draft a cornerback. No, you have to draft a cornerback. So the secondary jumps out at me. The linebacker spot with Bentley and Hightower, that could be an issue. I think you've got to draft at least one, if not two, younger linebackers as well. Hope that Jennings and Uche continue to develop, but linebacker could be a weak spot. And of course, listen, we're not going to spend a ton of time on it today because we've talked about it so much, but quarterback is obviously a problem as well with Cam. The guy like James White, I love James White, but you can find somebody who can replace James White. The offensive line, the Patriots have always been able to cobble it together. If they draft a young tackle, which they might do in this draft because it's a very, very deep position this year, then if you draft a tackle, you'll be able to figure it out. Whether you pick up Wynn's 50-year option, as you mentioned, that has to be done by May, or if you keep Trent Brown and you agree to an extension with him at a number that doesn't kill you. So those are the three spots. The three spots are secondary, and Devin McCourty, of course, also was listed. So the secondary is an issue. Linebacker is an issue. And of course, the age old question of the quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good baseline that you pointed out, Nick. You know, the good news for the roster for next year, the front five, if they're playing a 3-4, is set. I mean, everybody's under contract. Everybody's here. They're all veterans. You don't have anything really to worry about. I mean, would you like, you know, and this gets into a separate draft need, but you know, do you want to maybe upgrade on or reset the clock, I will, on a young edge guy? Like instead of Chase Winovich, instead of trying to make Chase Winovich work, year after year when he can't earn the coach's trust. Maybe they should just cut bait, try to get something for him. And there are some good young edge players in this draft where you draft them, they sit behind Kyle Van Noy. Is only really, he's only here for 2 years. You reset the clock on an edge guy who can learn for a year under Van Noy, and then all of a sudden he's ready. That might be worth looking at. But the front five is set. Jonathan Jones as slot is set. The interior of the offensive line is set with Awenu, Andrews, Mason. The tight ends we know are set between the guys that they signed, the two rookies that they have, if they hold on to them. And running back, like you said, running back's in a good place. You have Damian Harris. Now, Damian Harris is somebody interesting to bring up because, look, we're just going off what we know about these guys right now. And maybe some of the young guys were a little bit handicapped by COVID, and we don't know what they're going to do. But Damian Harris is a perfect example of, at this time last year, Nick, none of us knew what Damian Harris could do. We didn't know whether he was going to be on the roster. You know, we would have the same conversations we had about Damian Harris at this time last year. We would be having about Josh Uche, Anthony Jennings, you know, guys like that. These guys are not cast and die. Players are always moving up, down. They are never static. What goes for 1 year does not necessarily go for the next year when you're talking about young football players. But we're just dealing with where guys are right now. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, right now, the depth chart that I have up at BSJ for 2022, I have Miles Bryant as the starting free safety. You could also possibly put Jalen Mills there, which – would make cornerback even worse if you move Jalen Mills to safety and maybe Bryant stayed at corner. I do think Bryant has some a lot of upside. We saw him play a lot of different positions last year. D'Angelo Ross is a young sort of undrafted guy at cornerback that I do think is going to get some run this year. So he's in the mix. But, you know, right now you're looking at like a Jalen Mills, Miles Bryant, and then Kyle Duggar is really the lone strong safety right now on the team. And I think he's going to be a star, but, you know, we don't know. Both safety spots could use some help. Yeah. And right now at linebacker, you have Uche and Jennings. And we don't even know if Uche's a stand-up linebacker or he's the edge guy behind Van Noy or what have you. And Jennings, we don't know. It didn't look promising as a rookie, but we don't know. And like you said, the other big area, and look, I think we all expect Trent Brown to work out here, and it's a one-year deal, and they reach some extension at some point in time. I don't, from his comments, he doesn't want to go anywhere else and try that anymore unless somebody gives him a humongous bag of money, which I'm sure he'd be willing to take again. But, you know, just for, you know, discussion's sake, let's just say Trent Brown does work out and he's here for a couple more years. That helps you. But still, you know, if you don't tag Isaiah Wynn at $10 million for the fifth year, $10.5 million, then right now the only real tackles that you have on the roster for next year are Justin Heron and Yodney Cajuste, to the third-round pick who I think I might have seen on the practice field like twice.
I was going to say, get on the field. I mean, you can't get on the field. You know, when you look at this, I would say overall, big picture, I'm less concerned about the secondary, even though there could be some sizable gaps there next season, at least on the roster on paper. I'm a little less concerned about that, and I'm a little less concerned about offensive line because we've seen the Patriots be able to figure it out, right? Belichick has had a great track record. He doesn't always hit Duke Dawson, Joan Williams, and all those other guys, right? The Raze Dowling back in the day. He doesn't always hit, but he has a pretty good track record of finding good cornerbacks and have good cornerback play, right? Like, you know, he brings in guys. He finds Malcolm Butler. He finds J.C. Jackson. He paid Stephon Gilmore when people were shocked. Wait a minute. You know, why did they pay Gilmore as much as they did? And now he's the best corner in the game. He's not.
I'll just say, other than 2011, But yeah, we don't want to go through 2011 again.
No, no. Again, listen, there are always going to be these, you know, anomalies and these picks that don't work out. And that's the nature of the game. But overall, he's done a pretty good job of finding guys that can play in the secondary, whether it's in the draft or undrafted free agents. He's gone out and signed guys like Browner. Darrell Revis was an obvious one. Everybody knew he was good as long as he was healthy. And again, offensive line, they've been able to find the pieces. And so I'm a little less concerned about that. I do think linebacker and quarterback, you know, the history there, of course, you had Brady, so you're good. We still don't really know how good of an evaluator at the quarterback position is, you know, Josh McDaniels. And if he's running the offense, then, you know, he's the guy that drafted Tim Tebow in the first round. So, you know, I do think that's a huge question mark. As far as, you know, secondary offensive line, I think they'll be able to figure it out. And as you mentioned, Greg, you've got to hope that Uche and or Jennings pop for you. And I'm more confident in Uche, but man, if they could, if Jennings shows, and we talked about this last year, I do think all the second year players, even the tight ends, they deserve the benefit of the doubt early on. I'm not telling you that they get a pass for the entire season, but given the situation last year with COVID, you know, no rookie mini camps, no joint practices, no preseason, those guys were thrown into the mix. And so I think we'll have a better idea as to who those players are within the first month of this season. And so maybe Jennings pops, because if he does, and then you have Uche and Jennings, and then maybe you can hold on to Hightower for another year or two, and then Van Noy hangs around for another year. I mean, there is a way that you can draw it up that they'll be okay there, but they need Jennings to be good, and they need Winovich to be more consistent. And I still wouldn't mind them drafting a guy early on in this draft at the linebacker position.
Nick, last thing on this, and then we'll move on. But what are the positions, looking at this depth chart for 2022, what are the positions that you think they absolutely need to come out of this draft with to address that, to address those needs?
I'd feel good about a corner, because even if you have the history, I'd feel really good about drafting a corner. If they can get a guy like Caleb Farley at 15, or maybe they move back and draft him, J.C. Horn, somebody that I know you like. You know, I think a corner makes a lot of sense. I think an inside speedy linebacker makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
I still think, Greg, a number one wide receiver, man. Like, I like Nelson Agholor. Yep. We'll see about Kendrick Bourne.
Yeah, that's because you don't know. You don't know whether those guys are working. Agholor is probably the poster child for, is this going to work after his Philly experience? Like, and if he doesn't work and all of a sudden you're a ground zero again at wide receiver next year, I think you're right. I think they need to come out with a wide receiver, at least somebody that they think that can play in the next couple years.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, I was talking to Mike, the producer, before we recorded this podcast. It doesn't necessarily have to be Waddle at 15. If Waddle fell to 15, I'm drafting him in a heartbeat.
Yep.
It doesn't have to be a Waddle or a Smith at 15 if those guys don't fall to you. I was listening to Mel Kiper and Field Yates and Todd McShay's podcast yesterday after Kiper released his mock draft 4.0. And Kiper said, you know, I've got, I think he said 14 wide receivers going in the first two rounds. I think he has like 17 going in the first three rounds. I mean, wide receiver is very, very deep. If you need a receiver and you are dedicated and committed to finding a guy, you'll find a guy in this draft. So, you know, overall, I think big picture, Greg, add a cornerback would be good. I think you're okay at safety. I really do. I think you can figure that out.
I agree with you. I think you can figure it out.
I'd rather have Mills at safety, by the way, than cornerback. He was off at cornerback in Philly. Yep. So I'd go with a cornerback. I'd go with a fast athletic linebacker. I would also address the offensive line if I could get, you know, a tackle involved. I don't think that's a bad idea. And of course, you desperately need a quarterback and a wide receiver. Those are my top five needs. I might change the order. Obviously, quarterback is the most crucial position, but those are the five positions I'm looking at, because I think, again, I think you can, running backs, to me, I'm of the philosophy, you can find a running back. I'm not stressed out. You've got Damian Harris.
I agree with you.
You can find a guy. So those are the five positions I'd be looking at.
Okay. So we're pretty much on the same page. I would say if I had to rank them in terms of what they need for 2022 going forward. I mean, look, quarterback is obviously a must. I don't know if I would draft it first, but let's just say they need to find a guy in the first couple of rounds that they think within a year could be competitive for the starting position. So quarterback is definitely one. I think that cornerback and linebacker are, you know, 2A and B for me. I think they need to draft at both spots. And I don't really care. I mean, that's part of the reason why I had Micah Parsons in my mock draft, because he really solidifies things for, you know, not only for this year, because they could use him. He would be great for 1 year just blitzing from the second level, and then the next year he's ready to be a three-down starter. That would be the plan for him. I would be fine with a cornerback at 15, because they could use that there. You don't know what's going to happen with Gilmore. I agree with you on safety. I think they could figure that out, and I do think, you know, now thinking about it more, probably Mills is more of a safety for 2022 than anything. And hopefully they can get, you know, Phillips. Phillips is not, as long as the wear and tear doesn't get too much on him. I mean, I don't think he's that old, so he might really like it here. Hopefully he might be looking at his last big payday, so maybe he wants to try to cash in. But I would love to have Phillips back to sort of pair with Duggar and whoever they have at free safety. And it could be McCourty, because, you know, let's bring this up in terms of 2022. If the Patriots need to open up cap space, say for a Garoppolo or somebody like that, the easiest way for them to do it is to extend Devin McCourty and Dante Hightower for another year or two with dummy years tacked on.
Right.
So that's always an option. And I agree with you. I think wide receiver, I think they got to come out. It would have been nice if they had one last year, when that was also a very deep wide receiver draft.
But agreed.
They had to take a kicker in the fifth round. I think they have to come out with an offensive tackle, somebody that has the potential to play left tackle. I think they have to get one of those guys just to – and I think Justin Heron is going to be – is it Heron? I think it's Heron. Is going to be a good player for them. I don't know if he can play left tackle. So, you know, that's a concern. I would like to come out of the draft.
Very quickly. Yep. Owenu, any idea about maybe sliding him to tackle eventually?
He can play right tackle. I don't think he can play left tackle. I don't think he has the athletic ability to play left. I do think he could be a dynamite right tackle. And then if you bring Trent Brown back, Trent Brown could play left tackle. So that's a possibility. But the whole thing is you're hoping for Trent Brown, after he got paid, to be a professional and show up and not get hurt again like he did in Vegas. And I'm not ready to go there. Maybe he does it here. I don't know, but I'm not ready to, I want to have a backup for Trent Brown. Let's just say that. And then I think they need to look at, you know, taking some sort of running back in this draft. You know, possibly like a, it'd be nice to find a young Rex Burkhead type of guy, like a two-way sort of running back, just to give you a little bit of cover for James White and Sony Michel.
Does JJ Taylor play a role in all of this, Greg? Like, when you talk to guys at the facility, the people that you talk to, do you get any feeling that Taylor could be a part of the equation in the future there at running back?
I'll just say this. I don't hear his name very much, but I will say, you know, I think they view him sort of like a Stidham, like Stidham after his rookie year and things like that. Like, everybody on the outside's talking about him, but on the inside, they're like, you know, the kid's young, you know, he's making progress. It's tough to tell. Now, could he be a guy who pops this year in year two? Yeah, I think there's an opening there. I just don't think JJ Taylor isn't on the forefront of people's lists, but I do think he has a chance to be a factor. And, you know, who knows what happens at running back. Unless they feel really good about an undrafted running back, which you can get decent running backs undrafted, you know, I might go for one later in the draft just to, just to be sure, just to keep yourself cover, give yourself cover. And I look, people, some people aren't going to like this, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they give, how about this? How about this? When, if this happens, they give Sony Michel, they pick up his fifth year option because it's only, it's $4.5 million. And they let Isaiah Wynn walk at 10.5.
See,
yeah,
I would
hear Felger and Maz right now.
I mean, Sony Michel is so damn interesting, though, you know, because we've seen him.
He's solid.
He's dragged along at times, right? He hasn't looked great at times. He's not getting extra yards. But I thought last year when he was out and Damian Harris kind of took the reins, I thought when Sony came back, we saw a more competitive Sony. I thought we saw a more physical Sony. And we saw the best, in my eyes, since maybe the late, 2018 run in the playoffs and all that. I thought we saw the best Sony Michel as a Patriot last season when he came back. So, if you get that Sony Michel for a reasonable price, and then you say, all right, we've got Sony and Damian Harris as the two-headed monster, and you have J.J. Taylor as a third down back or the pass receiving back, or like you said, maybe you draft somebody in this year's draft in the fifth, sixth round, whatever it is, then that would make some sense. It's just, which Sony are we getting? Are we getting the healthy Sony who's motivated, who plays with an edge, or are we going to get that Sony Michel where you watch him play and you say, well, anybody could do that, what he just did. The offensive line, opened up a hole and he ran through the hole. Congratulations. Like, for me, when they drafted Sony, and I'm not big on drafting running backs in the first round. I think you can get them much later and they could be as good as they are in the first.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked Sony Michel at Georgia. I liked him a lot. I thought he had big play capability. So it all depends on which Sony that you get. And that's maybe that's the answer. Maybe you don't give him the option here because you don't know which Sony you're going to get. I do want to bring up something before we get to the member question of the day, though, because it happened yesterday. We talked about this earlier in the week. Justin Fields had his second pro day yesterday. The Patriots, outside of Belichick, they sent the cavalry yesterday, Greg, to watch Fields. McDaniels was there. Ziegler was there. Of course, the first pro day for Fields, Elliot Wolf was in attendance. Mike Groh was also there, who was their national scout yesterday. They sent the house to watch Fields. Have you heard anything about the pro day? And do you take anything out of who they have sent to watch him partake in these pro days?
So I have not circled back on the pro day. I figured I would do that this weekend. So they sent McDaniels, Ziegler, and Groh there. Now, I think we talked about this on the last podcast. Bill and Josh were both at Alabama while Ohio State was going on the first time. So they couldn't be in two places at once.
Right.
And I know local radio is making a big deal out of Belichick not being there. And look, I don't disagree with them, because Bill's ultimately going to make the decision, and it's great, whatever, McDaniels sees and files his report and tells Belichick and things like that. But at the end of the day, Bill needs to see the kid, and he won't see the kid.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to see what the significance of that is. I can't tell you right now, could it be Bill's letting Josh drive the bus offensively with the draft? It's possible. I haven't heard anything about that, but it's possible. And I think it's thanks, significant that Bill wasn't there, but those three guys are pretty powerful. And Ziegler, we've talked about it before. He has a lot of sway. He's not afraid to speak his mind with Bill. We'll see if that really, the rubber meets the road. It's a little bit different when you're doing it in his former positions, but now he's in the Casario position, and now you got to speak up on draft day and all that. We'll see how that goes. But I think it's a little bit too early to tell, on Fields as far as the Patriots, but it certainly doesn't hurt that they had McDaniels and company there. I don't know whether the same group is going to be at Trey Lance's pro day, which I think is at some point next week. I don't think it's determined yet who, if any, the Patriots are sending to his second pro day.
You know, when I look at McDaniels, the question is, like you said, we've read things and you've told us about how Belichick has changed his approach this year, at least early on. We don't know what's going to happen draft weekend. Yep. It might go back to what it's been and Belichick just calling all the shots. But from what we read and from what you have said, it sounds like Belichick has made this a more collaborative effort. So you wonder if this is truly Belichick saying, I'm going to go off of what you guys say and what you see. And maybe he's giving McDaniels the shot to go look at Fields and come back with a report and say, Bill, I think we can make this guy work. I think he's got the goods. The one question I do have left for you about Fields, and it's off of Mel Kiper's mock draft, which I just brought up a few moments ago. In Kiper's most recent mock draft, he has the Patriots moving up to 10, trading with Dallas, trading from 15 to 10 to draft Fields. Do you think that's possible? Like, I know we've talked about the Patriots not being uber aggressive in moving up in the top 5 or 6 to land a guy.
Yep.
But if they like Fields and he starts to fall, and the key team to me is Denver. We don't know what Denver wants to do. You and I have talked about George Payton, his history. You can listen to that in prior podcasts. You know, Denver's interesting, but if Denver passes up the quarterback at 9, do you think the Patriots could make what I would call a mini move up the board? Not a huge move, not an aggressive move, but a mini move if they like Fields and say, all right, let's move up to 10 with Dallas. Dallas drops down to 15. They get an extra pick. Dallas drafts the cornerback or defensive player that they want to bring in, and now we get our quarterback. How possible is that to you?
Okay, a couple different things on that. Because this is a good question. Number one, I don't think it's 100% that the Niners have taken Mac Jones at 3.
I agree.
At least that's what I'm hearing from NFL people. Are confused about what the 49ers are doing. And there is this train of thought in the NFL that, you know, everyone's trying to figure out why the Niners made the move so early. Why they traded so early. And there could be a bunch of different reasons. And that's not really all that important. What's important is there's a train of thought in the NFL that if the draft was the day after the trade, they would have taken Mac Jones. But now with a lot more time and, you know, look, the reaction in San Francisco has not been good to the belief that they are going to take Mac Jones. Some of the people in that organization listen to a lot of noise. So that's interesting. There's been the report about the differences between the personnel department and Shanahan, as far as Shanahan wants Jones, but the scouts want Justin Fields. So I don't think that is set in stone yet. And I do think that germane to this conversation, I think that the Patriots would make more of a mini leap for Mac Jones than they would Justin Fields, for a lot of the reasons that we went over in the podcast on Tuesday, and also the column that I wrote at BostonSportsJournal.com. As far as Fields, if he slides a little bit, look, yeah, the Broncos are interesting. If they pass on the Broncos, if the Broncos pass on him or whoever the quarterback is, which I don't know if they're going to do, but we don't know. But remember, you still have to look out for Chicago and you still have to look out for Washington. Apparently, I think it's, if I understand it correctly, I think it's Washington loves Trey Lance. This is just the reporting that's out there. Washington loves Trey Lance and the Bears love Justin Fields. That, I mean, who knows? But so those teams are out there and they're probably a lot more thirsty than the Patriots. Do I think the Patriots would make a, let's put all that aside. Do I think the Patriots would make a mini move somewhere 10, 11, 12, what have you for Justin Fields? My answer to that would be no. That's my feeling. I could be completely wrong. It's for a lot of the reasons that, you know, I just don't think he fits their parameters for a top 10 pick, which is, you know, basically that guy needs to be top 10 in his position, like right now in the NFL, and that he's basically plug and play ready to go. I just don't think they see him or many quarterback prospects like that. And so for that reason, I'm saying no, but I could be wrong.
All right, let's get to the BostonSportsJournal.com member question of the day. For $39.99, 11 cents a day on the annual plan, not only do you get top-notch analysis of all the Boston pro sports, but if you're a patch junkie, which of course you are, a membership at BSJ gives you access to a ton of video analysis Bedard does on the coaches' film and direct access to him in weekly chats. This is from M. Gilmetti. This is off of, is this off of a column that you wrote, Greg, recently?
Yeah, this is off of, that's the Justin Fields, how the Patriots view the athletic mobile quarterback compared to the rest of the league.
All right, here's what M. Gilmetti writes. We've heard Bill past several years mention in his press conferences talk about how much an advantage a mobile quarterback puts on the defense. We've had a huge difficulty defending quarterbacks who are mobile. Do you think he takes this into account?
Not really. I mean, look, are mobile quarterbacks a pain in the ass to the Patriots? Yes. Do they present issues at times? Yes. But the first of all, the Patriots win a lot of games against those guys. And at the end of the day, like, it doesn't matter what the guy – let's just use Mitch Trubisky, for example. You remember that game against the Patriots a couple years ago up in Chicago?
How could I forget?
Oh, my God. Mitch Trubisky was running all over the place on the Patriots. Like, they couldn't stop him. I remember that one run where he, like, zigzagged the whole field, like, 50 times, and nobody on the Patriots could tackle him. Oh. It was the most pathetic defense I've ever seen in my life.
That was a good time.
But – you think Bill wants Mitch Trubisky? Do you think Bill wanted him that day? No. Why? Because he can't make plays from the pocket when the game's on the line. Like, it doesn't matter what you do in the first quarter, in the second quarter. And I remember Tim Tebow, speaking of halves, ran roughshod through the Patriots for a first half, and they shut his ass down in the second, and the Patriots won the game. Like, that's all nice, the bells and whistles and all that. You can do that. The Lamar Jacksons. But, and maybe this is why Bill said, you know what? I don't like Lamar Jackson. Yeah, everybody wants me to draft him. Josh wants me to draft him. But you know what? I don't think that kid can make a throw, you know, you throw the stick route on third and 10 from the pocket. So I'm not drafting him. And I think that's what it comes down to. It doesn't matter what you do in the first or second quarter. It doesn't matter what stats you put. Can you make enough winning plays from the pocket? Because you can have the most well-designed running, you know, mobile quarterback offense in the world. But if you can't make the plays in the fourth quarter down 2 minutes where you don't have the running game, where they're not worried about you running other than spying you, and you got to make throws down the field, if you can't do that, you are not a quarterback for the New England Patriots. So that, to me, is the final measure of any quarterback with them. And I just don't think they're there on Justin Fields. But like I said, I could be wrong, and they just had his pro day, so I'll know more probably next week. But as of right now, guys like him, Lance, I just don't think they're polished enough as passers right now, or that they could see them making short improvement to get where they need him to be.
Subscribe, rate, and review. He's Greg Bedard. I'm Nick Cattles. Maybe we'll have some more tidbits next week on Justin Fields once Greg goes digging. I'm sure something will happen over the weekend we'll have reaction to. Until then, everybody be safe, be good, be healthy. Enjoy the weekend. It's the Greg Bedard Patriots Podcast with Nick Cattle.